Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, Sign Guy and QT with you here on a Friday afternoon like usual. Real quick before we get into things today, if you are looking for some pro wrestling in the next couple of days, tonight, Defy Wrestling featuring Brian Pillman Jr. in Seattle, Washington, right here in our neck of the woods. Also in Seattle, you have 3-2-1 Battle, ARW in Cocoa, Florida, WCWO in Indianapolis, Indiana, like usual, PPW in Jeffersonville, Indiana, Warriors of Wrestling in Brooklyn, New York, RPW in Alberta, Alabama, WTF in Carmel, Indiana, and BCW in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Tomorrow night, you can find myself in Meridian, Idaho for Wrestle Club, BPW in Enfield, Connecticut, CSW in Mossy Head, Florida, SIW in Clearwater, Texas, Black Label Pro in Crown Point, Indiana, New Wave Pro in Spencer, Indiana, Supreme Wrestling in Madison, Indiana, BPW in Owensboro, Kentucky, CCW in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, GLWA in Coloma, Michigan, EWI in Kildare, North Dakota, KSWA in Verona, Pennsylvania, RSWF in Memphis, Tennessee, SWE in Canton, Texas, and DCW in Pascagoula, Mississippi. So get out there, support your local independent wrestling wherever it might be. And I would like to welcome back to the show someone that I am very happy to have here during Russia Month, Nikita Breznikov. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Jason. I'm glad to be back.
Well, one of the things that you have been known for, of course, in your career was managing Nikolai Volkov, and he sadly passed away since the last time you were here. I know that Nikolai was a big part of your career. What can you tell us about Nikolai Volkov as a professional wrestler and as a human being?
Well, if it wouldn't be for Nikolai Volkov, you would not even be speaking with me. I would never have gotten into the business. And I met him as a matter of happenstance. I was working for the police department at the time, and I saw that he was going to be at a local indie show for a boys' club. So I still am a collector. Now it's DVDs, but back then it was tapes. So I saw the advertisement on one of those signboards in the 7-Eleven, which would become a staple of our lives later, you know, those cardboard placards. And so I said, okay, let me try to talk to Nikolai. So I go there. I'm in uniform. I was working the day shift. So he and I hit it off. He did not have anything as far as tapes go. So he was like, oh, please, I'd be so happy. I'd pay you if you make me. So I said, no, you don't have to pay me nothing, man. I feel like I owe it to you for all the years you've given us. So we became close. And then, of course, my love of the business, I was about 230 pounds. So I was pestering him to get in. And he didn't want to do it because he said, no, you have a good job. And everybody gets hurt. It just, no, just wait. So then finally, I wore him down to the point where he said, okay, you could be the manager. I said, ah, man, I don't want to be stupid manager, but okay. So it turned out as history shows, we progress, we tagged up from time to time, because some of the guys I was watching, like Nikolai, I'm 230, I'm bigger than a lot of these. He's like, yeah, what the hell, we become tag team. But he was wonderful. Jason, I'll tell you, as a person, he was a complete opposite of his character. He, I know years later he became big baby face, but who he's known for is the hated Russian heel, even before all of the wearing of the USSR and the Soviet flag after the Hulk Hogan explosion. Before that, in the 1970s, he wore black trunks, black boots. Of course, he began as one of the Mongols in the Mongol tag team. So he never needed that gimmick to get over. He got over with his strength and his wrestling ability. And he was a natural. He loved the sport. He was probably the biggest Bruno Sammartino fan that there ever has been, believe it or not. And we all are. We're all fans when we enter that portal to go into the business, because you've got to love it. And it's, I'm sure there's a few minor exceptions, but basically it's the people that grew up and loved it, which he did. But as a person, he was just wonderful. After he left the wrestling business, he became an inspector for Baltimore County, because he was a native of the Baltimore area. And his job was to investigate high grass and weeds. You know, bullshit, but to give people citations if they didn't cut the lawn and all this stuff. You know, people always complaining about the neighbors, whoever. There's always somebody whining. So Nikolai goes, and it was an old lady, like in her 80s. And he said, she had tears. She said, sir, I have nobody. I have a lawnmower, but I can't push, and, you know, I can't do it. And he said, you know, I could not give her no bullshit $500 ticket. I cut her grass after work, and he did. And that's the kind of guy Nikolai Volkov was. I watched him give away pictures, dolls, everything, sign things. We became very good friends with someone, a guy, a big fan named Scott Wilson. Scott wanted us to come to his house for his birthday party. Yeah, you know, we did it as a job, but that turned into a lifelong friendship. I mean, after all, we said, Scotty, we ain't charging to come here anymore. We're friends, you know, we come here, you show us a great time. We just love to be here. And that's how Nikolai was. He wasn't, you know, some people towards the end of his career, they thought they were pulling one over, because they thought, oh, well, they could get him cheap and he'll come do these little shows. Like, no, he knew. He was no dummy. He knew what was going on. He loved wrestling. So if he had a chance to be on, if it was small show or Madison Square Garden, he would be there. And that just goes to show you, he would always give people a big break. Sometimes I thought maybe he was a little too soft, and I think sometimes people may have worked him, but he had the big heart. Heart was as big as his chest. That was Nikolai Volkov.
Now, one of the things that you have done in recent time is you put out a book with Scott Teal, a very good book, actually. Can you tell us a little bit about what the book is about, and what made you decide to write a book at this point?
My pleasure, Jason. When It Was Real is the title. And the reason I chose that title was because it doesn't cover me as a wrestling manager, as a wrestler, as anything to do with it. It covers me as a fan. This is about the WWWF from 1970 all the way through 1979, because to me, that was the greatest era of all time. And, well, for me, in my perspective, that's when I started watching, was 1970. I heard kids in school talk about it, so, you know, I'd tune in. Let me see what this thing is they talk about, this wrestling. And, man, I was hooked right from the beginning. And I was the victim of child abuse. My father was an alcoholic. He'd beat the hell out of me and just call me horrible names, not even use my birth name, just always something degrading. Nothing we can even mention on the air, believe it or not. It was that horrible. But I had wrestling. That's what I turned to. Wrestling is what kept me sane. It kept me alive. And they were always there. When you turn on the television, I didn't get to go until 1973 because where the Civic Center in Baltimore was located was a pretty nasty part of town. So you wouldn't go there unescorted. I was still a young teenage years, so there's no way. So November 28, 1973 was my first show. My best friend and his father, we convinced him to take us. Funny story, because his father hated battle royals, but it was a battle royal that night. And Andre the Giant was making his first appearance in the area. And let me tell you, that was just spectacular because, in my opinion, Nikolai was the first giant because he was about 6'4 and a half and 345. But then when Andre came on the scene, wow, unbelievable. So to me, my book gives back to those men and women of that era that I feel like they were surrogate parents to me. It was something that we turned to. But you know what I found over the years, Jason, whether it be acting, police work, at a doctor's office, lawyers, whoever, people all have a connection to pro wrestling in their lives. And it's usually that they loved it. So it's like, you know what? I've got all these memories. I've got these collections. After I retired from the police department, my wife brought me out to the Seattle area. And I had some time. And I put it together. And it took me 2 years to get everything lined up and in order, and then it took me 6 years to find somebody that actually would get behind it, and that would be Scott Teal, who was a genius. I call him the maestro because I gave him the words and the music, and he put the melody, and he made it all happen, because believe me, I gave Scott over 500 pages, because this covers, I don't think we missed an angle. I mean, there's all just about coverage of every show, but see, the difference is, now somebody described this as, you put me in that arena with you, Nikita, the way you describe it, and that's what I talk about in the book. It's what it meant to our lives. You take a look like Captain Lou Albano, one night in particular when we watched him get murdered by Bruno, and, you know, Lou, he loved the bleed, no problem there. And all that nonsense people would say, oh, that's fake, it's this, it's that. It's like, no, look at this blood. It's unbelievable. I mean, I was seen on many homicides and traffic accidents. I don't think I've seen as much blood as when Lou Albano wrestled Bruno on August 16th of the following of 75. And it was like, yeah, this is something, maybe it sounds like we're crazy, perverted, whatever, but if you hurt Bruno, Chief, one of our favorites, if you were one of those rats like the Valiant brothers, who I became dear friends with over the years, it was personal to us. And like when Greg Valentine broke Chief's leg, Ken Patera broke White Wolf's neck, it's like, and Spiros Arion turning on Bruno, the world stopped. Jason, I'm telling you. Yeah, today wrestling, I don't knock anything. I support everybody that gets in there, that climbs into that squared circle between those ropes. You take your life into your hands and into the person, your partner, who you're working with's hands. But it's, you know, different than what it was then, because in the 70s, I mean, internet didn't come along until the 80s. And it wasn't really like it is today, obviously. It wasn't full-blown. So it was, I like to say, it was innocent, yet rogue. But you didn't know what was going on in Boston if you lived in Baltimore, unless you had a friend that you corresponded with by mail. Because, God forbid, your parents find that you make a long-distance call, because that stuff was expensive back then. You just didn't do those things. So, you know, we were in the dark. The only thing you had was championship wrestling, 1 hour each week. If you were lucky enough, like, we were able to pick it up with what we called rabbit ears and tinfoil, and they got the UHF station of All-Star Wrestling. That was it, and what you saw live. So the other description of my book, When It Was Real, by some industry people, is that it does tell how these men and women made a go of things with just what they connected with us as we watched them in the arenas. And we went monthly. You know, it was like, some people will tell you wrestling is cyclical, and I do not agree with that, because I was one that would buy the tickets the night of the current show for the next month before it was even, like, we had the date, but we had no idea who was going to be there, but we knew it was going to be a great show, and we wanted to have the best seats. So with me, I wrote this book, and like Scott Thiel, he said, if you're doing this to get rich, I'm not your guy. He said, what I do, my books are for passion, for love of the business. I said, oh, Scott, that's, and when I explained my purpose, he says, okay, Nikita, then that sounds great. I'm behind you on it. And he did a fantastic job, Jason, because he even surprised me, because the thing, the book, it contains over, well, it has 227 black and white images. And I'm thinking, man, because I got the advertisement cards before I actually saw the book. I'm thinking, what the heck is Scott, what did he do? Because I didn't give him those many images. What he put in the book were the newspaper clippings. And to us in the 70s, I mean, that was a staple as well. That's what the advertisement was, like a couple-inch little picture of two little small pictures of maybe the main wrestlers. And then, you know, telling you who's going to be on the show and the date, of course, the arena. So, yeah, that's a collector's item within itself. Especially for me, I was so excited when I got it. I told the wife, I said, you know, I always talked about wanting to see or make a clipping book, but it's so hard to, you know, get these things transposed and get them into a readable form. I said, Scott just did it for me. If I had written the thing, I would have bought it, because it's that great to me. As a goofy wrestling fan, when, I don't say that with any disrespect, but I mean, I'm goofy for wrestling. It's like, if they put anything on a tombstone, if I'd be lucky enough to have one, it would read, he loved his wrestling. That would be me. So this book is here. It gives back to, it's a memory, a walk down memory lane. It actually was described by another site as a love song to the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. It's like, yeah, you guys did a great job, without a doubt. And it's still, it touches people's hearts. You know, when somebody, you know, in the entertainment world dies, you know, it touches you. But not like wrestling fans. When we lose somebody from our childhood, it rocks our world. It hits us hard, and it hits us deep, and it hits us for a long time. And I got lucky not just to know Nikolai, but Chief J. Strongbow became a very close friend over the years, and Luscious Johnny Valiant. There were others, and it's not the name drop, but it was like, I'm a lucky kid. You know, my childhood might have been the shits, but years later, sure made up for it. You know, God was good to me. I got lucky not just to get into something I loved, because people say to me, gee, I guess you're living your dream. And I say, are you crazy? I never imagined I could be involved with professional wrestling. And no, I never dreamt it. I was just lucky enough to get to do it. And Jason, any day of the week, I'd rather be lucky than good. But in my case, I was both. So that was a good step for me.
Now, in your career as a manager, obviously you had to work with a lot of different referees on the independent level. Independently speaking, some referees are very, very good at what they do. Some of them, not so much, especially working with a manager. Not every referee is solid on how to work with a manager during a match. From your perspective, who would you say were some of the better referees that you worked with?
Without a doubt, my all-time favorite is Fred Richards. He was based in the New York, New Jersey area. Fred was great. He appeared on Heroes of Wrestling as well. And another fellow that loved the business. And we just had a chemistry, without a doubt. Besides being lifelong great friends, we just had this chemistry that clicked. And so it came out during matches that we could really tear into each other and interact. And Fred was smart as to what was going on, obviously, or he wouldn't have been in there. You know, I got to work with Billy Caputo a bunch of times, too, who was big in Madison Square Garden. So those two would have to definitely be favorite referees that I frequented, because I was based more in the Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut. We hit that circuit more so than anything in Pittsburgh, Steubenville area. So, yeah, but Fred Richards definitely comes to mind as all-time favorite referee without a doubt.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to QT for a bit.
Hey, what's up, brother?
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Nikita. Welcome back to the show.
Well, QT, good to be here, man. You and Sun Guy, you guys got a good production here. I'm happy to be a part of it.
Well, we've been at it for quite some time, yes.
Good.
Yes.
You know, you can't beat longevity, because that's the mark of success.
That's true, yes. We have been pretty successful. Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, Nikita, I listened to your Jimmy Falcon Grandmasters of Wrestling interview on Cloverleaf Radio. Were you yourself the subject of focus on the DVD series Grandmasters of Wrestling, the greatest selling wrestling DVD of all time?
I'm in it. I managed Nikolai against Bam Bam Bigelow. And I tell you, that's a story, and it's probably a show in itself, as you heard from Jimmy. And I think Jimmy's the biggest fan of that event, which started out being called Maccabia Mania, or Shekel Slam, because the Maccabia, he wrestled the Iron Sheik. Hey, Ken Patera was doing the commentary. That was basically, it wasn't done purposely, but that was like a prelude to like a Heroes of Wrestling, where you had legends that got together. I mean, that was just packed full of legends. And as a side note, I was preparing for a show in the Maryland area, so I was doing some backstage promo shots with my own production camera. So it was just a grand event, but oh boy, did we love it. And of course, Fred Blassie was there live doing Pencil Neck Geek. And TT, I'll tell you, to me, that was like one of the top 10 great things in my life, just to stand there and watch Fred Blassie performing Pencil Neck Geek. That was just classic.
Do you have any stories of wild airplane trips with the Iron Sheik that you can tell our listeners? Maybe he opened up a side door in the airplane.
Well, I'll tell you, with Iron Sheik, I love him without a doubt, because he is the real deal without a doubt, because this guy, you know the stories, he was the Shah of Iran's bodyguard. Then he had to get out of the country. And when he came here to the United States, he trained Olympic teams in 1972 and 1976. And he was that good. And I would say he is still that good. But see, you know, there's a lot of controversy surrounding, you've seen it, you go to YouTube, you watch him on Howard Stern and some of the other things, and it's hysterical. There's no question about it. And yes, he is like that in real life. He's like when you push the button and you just jump back because you know that you just go over the top. But the thing you got to really remember, and what I try to hold more dear and try to put forward and give a bigger push to, is his dedication to the business. Because when you look back at Sheik Wrestling, Bob Backlund, because he won the first Battle Royal on June the 4th of 79, and then he wrestled Backlund. And the reason for that was that, you know, they wanted to match those two up, but it was like, if we announce this match, they're afraid of a riot because at the time all the heat going on with Iran and things of that nature, so they figured this way, we got to get this match in, Backlund, Great Hussein at that time, it's got to be, so that's how they did it. He won the very first Battle Royal, and then, you know, him and Bob Backlund put on just a great match. But I'll say this about Sheik, that if you were working a match with Sheik and he was going to give, he was stiff, when it, especially when it came to the chair shots. It was like, oh, my God. Because I'll tell you one funny story. It had to do with Heroes of Wrestling. So Sheik got on the wrong plane. Now, Nikolai and I came from Maryland, so we didn't have anything to do with him arriving there. Leaving, different story. We're all leaving together, things of that nature. But he got there, he was late. So they sit and figure out what the finish was going to be with Bushwhackers. And they're there, we're going against Nikolai and Sheik. So Sheik shows up, and they said, well, Sheik, you're late. So you're going to put Luke over. No. Why would we do that? You like, that's stupid. Why would they get a manager? But you know what? There's so many goofy things going in wrestling, it probably would have worked. But finally, he just relented and did it. But it was good. It worked out pretty nice. And, you know, that was another thing. Heroes of Wrestling, it takes heat from being the worst pay-per-view of all time. It's like, you know, you got to be kidding me. People that say that, that's like going to Yankee Stadium and boo at an old-timers game. I mean, look, if you expected those men and women to get in there like they were in their prime, well, then you were a nut because they were past their prime, obviously, but they still had enough intestinal fortitude to get in there and give it a shot. And they did a damn fine job. And you take a look at some of the things that are out there today, and it's like, I don't know how you can say that. I thought it was a damn good pay-per-view myself, but of course I would be prejudiced since I was in it.
Well, Nikita, I agree with you that some of the Iron Sheik's chair shots were a little bit stiff, and Andre the Giant seemed to notice this and hear about the Sheik treating other wrestlers at times rough. And he didn't get along too well with the Sheik. And in fact, I saw one match where Andre the Giant just stood on the Iron Sheik's lower back. Do you see that incident?
Yeah, that, and Friday was the guest referee because Freddie was supposed to be the guest ref, but Freddie couldn't make it. Yeah, that was in the Meadowlands. And he was rough. He hurt the Sheik very badly in that match. And it's obvious, too, that you can see it. Now, I have a copy of it. So, yeah, you know, I've watched it from time to time. And it's like, wow, you know, Andre, you know, of course, you know, when you first saw it, and I had nothing to do with the business. And it's so you're expecting, you know, people are going to get clobbered. But then later, you know, when I got to know what's what and really understand it, it's like, wow, he was brutal to the Sheik in that match. And then you hear the stories years later that he didn't like him and things of that nature, and it's like, wow, it sure comes forward in that match.
Well, when you have 500 plus pounds standing on your lower back, that can usually hurt anyone.
Yeah, yes. You know, it wasn't just that. And you're right, TT. That, you know, that's a devastating effect without a doubt, but he was taking some pretty stiff shots from the Giant throughout the whole thing. The boot to the face, the chops, and the slams, you know. There's a way to handle things in there, and then there's another way that you're just a brute, and she got the brute end of the stick on that one.
Yes, that's true. Well, okay, well, I really enjoyed your interview on Cloverleaf Radio with Jimmy Falcon and Gremlina. How many times have you been on there? Have you been on there more than once?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was on there not too long ago. Jimmy gave me a plug for the book, and I've been known him for probably 10 years. Gremlina, just a beautiful human being. So anytime he calls, and sometimes it'll be because somebody can't make it, it's like, sure, Jimmy, always happy to get on there. And that's why, you know, I call you guys and I get the Blog Talk Radio, and it's like, oh, I know that deal without a doubt, because that's the first time I ever got that was with Cloverleaf Radio. So yeah, he's just a joy to be with. Always enjoy being on that show as well.
Oh, very nice. Okay, all right.
I'll tell you one thing though. I did make one fatal mistake over the years. When I left, that what do they call it again? The DVD. What's the name of it? The greatest selling of all time.
Yes. The grandmasters.
But when I left that show, I had about 50. I didn't steal them. The guy running the show, he's like, yeah, take them. What are we going to do? The show's over. Just take the posters. So I had them with me, and I had them with me for a long time, many years. And one of the – this goes back probably 25 years. I can't believe it. And a move that I was made, it's like, nobody cares about them. I just let them go. I mean, it's like, man, Jimmy almost wants to spank me on that one. Because it's like, Nikita, I'd love to have one of those posters. It's like, yeah, man, I know. The things we could have done with them. So I've got the T-shirt. I've got the posters signed with just about everybody on the show. But that was a fatal mistake I made letting those posters go because, man, so many people. But we didn't know. It was just going to be a regular indie show. And then all of a sudden, you know, even the mark of excellence is that Howard Finkel has a copy of that, the Grandmasters of Wrestling. And because Howard Finkel, he's probably right up there, one of the all-time great fans in history. And that's the mark of excellence there. Howard's got a copy.
Oh, wow. Howard Finkel, huh?
Yes.
Very nice. Wow. Okay. Well, Nikita, Adam West got to be the voice of the mayor of Quahog on the Family Guy show. On one episode, they were going to rename James Woods High School to Adam West High School on one of the episodes in season 17. My question is, how do you think you would have done in a wrestling match against Adam West if you could time travel to the year 1966 when he was in his physical prime on the Batman show?
Well, I'm going to tell you, TT, it's man love as far as Adam West and I are concerned because he was the first hero and probably – and I told him this because I got to know him over the years, that he's one of the main reasons I became a police officer. I would put him over without a doubt. I would blade for him. Whatever he'd want to do, he'd do it with me because I still watch the show till this day. And that's something else that just it touched people. And he was a wonderful guy, you know, and not just from knowing him, but hearing stories and watching how he performed with people and Harriet, Madge Blake on the show. They said that because I know just about every line of the show and the facts of the show, but they said, you know, she was getting up in age, so she was having some trouble with lines. And one of the directors, and directors can be some miserable hemorrhoids. Let me tell you, I worked with many over the years. Some really good, but some can be a hemorrhoid. And they were starting to get on her. And, you know, he stepped in and he's like, hey, you know, knock it off. Give her a little bit of a break here, man. And he said the next day she had a beautiful apple pie baked for him. And, you know, that sounds just like Adam West. You know, he was perfect for that role because I think a lot of him, and as an actor, if you don't put a lot of yourself into a role, it's going to fail. And a lot of me comes out into Nikita Brezhnikov because I was a policeman at the time. Because the first show I worked was for Dennis Carluzzo, the late Dennis Carluzzo, who, in my opinion, was one of the greatest, most underrated indie promoters of all time. And when he looked at me, and we didn't say anything, I just showed up with Nikolai, and he was like, man, you had a presence about you. I said, well, Dennis, that's because I'm a policeman. And it was like, wow, boom. And that was it, because then, you know, we're off to the races with the benevolent shows and stuff like that. But yeah, good old Adam West. Back to that. You know, he's from up here, Walla Walla, Washington, because I'm just outside of Seattle. I'm in Everett, Washington these days. So the 19th of next month is his birthday, Adam West's birthday, and they usually have Adam West Day every September 19th in Walla Walla. I'm going to try to make it. I've never been, but I just feel moved that I need to be there this year, so I'm going to try to make it. It's about a four-hour ride, but it's certainly worth it.
Well, I really liked Adam West's work with Frank Gorshwin, the Riddler.
Boy, my wife's going to hit me with the shoe because I imitate the Riddler and the Joker, and it's like, oh, geez, I hate them. I hate that because that's all you do all day. It's like Frank Gorshin, I'll tell you what, there's another one. Two big mistakes I made in my life. Frank Gorshin was appearing in Baltimore at the, let me think a bit now, the Hippodrome, which is a famous theater. Three Stooges appeared there over the years, Abbott and Costello, you know, when acts were live. So he was making an appearance, and I said, you know, I'd like to stop by and get an autograph, see Frank Gorshin or whatever, good picture with him. But I didn't go. Next year, boom, he's gone. It's like, damn it. You know, I missed that opportunity. The other one was Johnny Unitas, was Nikolai's neighbor. And I'm a big, since I was from Baltimore, I was a Baltimore Colts fan. I have a number 19 jersey. And I always bug Nikolai, please, let's go see John Unitas. Nikolai said, oh, we go next week. We go next week. And then, boom, John Unitas is gone. It's like, that's two that I could really put the boots to myself on.
Wow, that was, that man, to meet Frank Gershwin would have been great. I liked his work with Julie Newmar, the original Catwoman. Yes.
Yes. You know, he was nominated for an Emmy for his Riddler performance.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yes, as best actor, best guest star in a comedy series. And people don't realize that Batman was a comedy, but it was. You know, when it was done, it was genius, actually. And at that time, I didn't have a color set, so we didn't get to enjoy it until the movie, and that was just, like, breathtaking. But it was innovative as far as the colors that were used, the camera angles, and the camp, because it was done so tongue-in-cheek, no laugh track or anything like that. And, you know, the funniest thing is the guy that created the Batman theme song, Neil Hefti, it was like I read a story where he said, I was pulling out my hair. You know, I'm trying to do this song to get this show going. It's got to have a catchy theme song. And it's like, it's only one word throughout the whole thing, Batman. It's like, how simple, how perfect. You know, he just can't beat it. Of course, the first couple of chords, anybody, just practically anybody knows what that music is. It's Batman's theme song. And it's like, too wild, man.
Did you know of any wrestler in the 70s that used the Batman theme song as their entrance music?
I don't know if Tony Marino did that or not. I know he used the gimmick for a while, but I'm not sure, because that was mostly Pittsburgh, where he centered, in Steubenville, around that Tri-City area there. So in those days, I was too young. I didn't get around. I saw some things in magazines, but nobody ever commented that that song was, it probably, I doubt it, because, you know, there was no music in that time. So my best answer would be no, because nobody ever needed theme music. They just came right on out, and that was it.
You know,
really,
okay.
I'd say the first theme music used would have been Nikolai Volkov coming out to the Soviet national anthem. That, I think that was probably the first, and then, you know, they picked up with Hogan and things like that. But if we got time, I'll tell you a quick story. Nikolai said that he was working in Louisiana for Bill Watts, and Grizzly Smith, Jake the Snake's father, he was the booker, and he was going to get a big fine because he didn't bring the cassette with the Soviet national anthem. So Watts said, hey, I'm going to give you a big fine. You know, you screwed up tonight. And Nikolai said, no, you don't have to give him a fine. I sing it in the ring. I know the words. And he's like, really? He said, yeah, I'll sing. They said, that's a hell of an idea. Give it a shot. So Nikolai said, I go out. The announcer says, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, Nikolai Volkov's tape was stolen, and he cannot play the Soviet national anthem tonight. So the whole place is going crazy. They're cheering. However, just so you're not disappointed, Nikolai Volkov will sing the Soviet national anthem. And he said, man, when they started booing, he said, I start singing Soyuz Nedoshim. And he said, the place, they start stomping. He said, that's the first time in my life I was scared. He said, I thought it was going to be a riot. He said, my God. And that caught on. It was like, boom. That's the way to go, Joe. Jake, just let him sing it. Perfect.
Wow. Well, you know, the entrance music is a subject that Sign Guy and myself ask a lot about on our show. It's a huge subject. Yes. And I often suggest YouTube videos of certain music videos to certain wrestlers. Yes.
Well, I'll tell you, Song Guy and TT, on that topic, you know, I come from the era as a ticket buyer where there was none. You just look towards the dressing room, the cameras would flash, and then you'd hear either boos or cheers. Okay, so that was how they made their way to the ring. I like it. I can't say that it's hurt the business at all. I think it's a wonderful thing. I got to admit, I turned away after Hogan after about a year because it kind of became mundane for me. But it was very exciting in the beginning. And when he would come out to that theme music, it would be spine tingling without a doubt. It'd make your hair stand up because it was they captivated the crowd. The building was swept away in a wave, I'll say that much. But see, that was more pomp and circumstance as opposed to it would be like a nice steak they put on your plate, but the damn thing is overdone and all you're doing is chewing on it. You know, it's hard to swallow. So it's like it didn't have the substance of the pre-Hogan era. And I'm not knocking it because I don't think there's a greater name associated with wrestling in the regular person's mind. But for us that love it, it would be Bruno or Backlund or Superstar Grand, people like that, or Chief Strongbow, but, you know, regular people, if you talk about wrestling, I guess maybe now The Rock, you know, because Hogan's been gone for a while, but the entrance music, I like it. I have to say it really elevated wrestling.
Well, Nikita, Don Owens in the 60s and 70s paid his wrestlers very well for the Northwest Territory of Portland. He never stiffed anyone. Can you yourself tell us about one of your first paychecks that came from a wrestler who was also a fair paymaster, Killer Kowalski? Can you tell us about your first paycheck?
Yes, I can, because near and dear to my heart, good old Walter, it was unbeknown to me that it was going to happen. At the time, you know, we were in Baltimore, so I was only like a year into the business, not quite a year. So Nikolai said, you want to go Walter's show at Boston? He said, I have my ticket, but you can buy a cheap one. I said, oh, hell yeah. I mean, for Baltimore to Boston was $35, no problem. I said, man, be on Killer Kowalski show. Yeah, just to meet him, number one. I said, yeah, Nikolai, pack the bag, let's go. So the night before, we were working for Richard Byrne. And Walter it wasn't his show. He was a referee. It was Nikolai against Iron Mike Sharp. We were faces that night. So Iron Mike, I mean, God love him. He was a wonderful guy, but boy, he could lay the shots in there because he said, how hard can I hit you? How hard? How hard? I said, Mike, easy. Don't kill me, okay? I'm not 300 pounds, okay? I'm 230, but don't murder me, please. Okay. So he hit me with a barbell that night, you know? Mike was a little stiff, too. So Walter saved me that night for the finish. Mike's beating the hell out of me on the ropes. Walter comes over, stiff arms him, and then they trip up Mike Sharp, Nikolai gets the pin. So the next day was Walter's show. This goes all the way back, June 23rd of 96. So that was Walter's show. So we're heels that day. And Steve Lombardi, the Brooklyn Brawler, he donned everything as Doink. He was doing the Doink the Clown gimmick. So, you know, Walter, he's the guest referee again, and that day he beat the shit out of me because I was doing all the nasty stuff. So at the end of the show, I'm in the dressing room, so Walter says, hey, kid, come here. I say, hey, Walter, what's up? He says, here, put that in your pocket, and keep doing good, and be good to Nikolai, take care of me. I'm like, Walter, really? He's like, yeah, go ahead. So then Nikolai said, you know, Walter did not make a lot of the money. He said, you know, the show was okay, but he did not have to do that. I said, no, I didn't come here expecting that. It's like, my God. So then years later, I saw Walter a couple more times, and I said, man, never forget that, Walter. But see, I had lots of Polish in my background, and he's, you know, Walter's Polish, of course, with the Kowalski name. And so he said, yeah, I know. You're Polish, too, I know. He was a good guy. Another one opposite of his character, a humanitarian. But I'll tell you one thing about Kowalski. He didn't get married till like the last year of his life. I said, see, Nikolai, Walter was tough as nails, vegetarian, but he didn't know what it would be like to be married. He tried to take it like dive into deep end. You go start the shallow end and work your way up. It was too much for him to take, in my opinion. So that's what happened.
Oh, wow. Holy smokes. Okay. Well, Nikolai, who do you think has the more famous tongue? Gene Simmons of the rock band Kiss or George the Animal Steel with his green tongue?
George the Animal Steel, one of my all-time favorites. Another one I imitate all the time. And a nice guy. He was wonderful. Tell you another quick coincidence story. I was doing a web series out in Michigan, and Madison Heights, Michigan. And I thought George Steele was from Madison. I didn't really know the difference. So I, staying with the director, we're two blocks away from, there's a school at the end of the block, a high school. So I'm thinking, okay, you know, that's nice, that's no problem. So I'm talking to Johnny Valiant later in the week, and Johnny says, that's where Uncle George was teaching. He said, you're right there. He said, no, it's Madison Heights. That's where he was. I'm like, Jenna, are you serious? Wow, that's wild. So when I got back a couple weeks later, I called George. I said, hey, George, I was in your old neighborhood. He said, where did you stay? What street were you on? I said, Lawrence Street. He said, what block? I lived on Lawrence. And I was like one block up from where he used to live. It's like my mother, she was goofy, and God rest her soul, but she used to say it's a small world. And, man, she hit the nail on the head. It certainly was a small world. It is a small world, and that was wild. But, no, George Steele, you know, it's funny. When he with that green tongue, but that didn't really come about until, like, 78. And I mentioned that in the book because he didn't really need it for a long time. Because him, I mean, we were scared to death of the guy. All he had to do was look in our direction. You know, we were always, back in those days, you didn't have a lot of guardrails and things like that. You could get close to the wrestlers. So, you know, we'd be up close looking. And soon as he'd turn around and give those eyes, man, the parting of the Red Sea, we'd climb over each other to get the hell out of the way before he got you.
Wow.
I mean, he was it. He didn't have to do much. You know, it was just like he was two shows in one. What he was going to do in the ring, and then what he was going to do when he was outside of the ring. And years later, I discovered the secret of sitting at ringside. And, man, the state athletic commissioners, they hated it. Because he'd come out, turn over the tables, and they'd say, that son of a bitch, I hate when he's on a card. Because he would upset all the old-timers sitting at ringside just trying to pass the day and collect an easy paycheck. Because I don't know what purpose the bastards really sold or proved other than collect a payday and aggravate everybody in the wrestling business. But it was good that George Steele aggravated the state athletic commissioners with his gimmick. It was one good thing with it.
Well, Nikita, I talked earlier about Don Owens. Another wrestler from that area was Stan Stasiak, master of the punch, who at one point brought Andre the Giant to his knees with the heart punch. Did you yourself ever feel the wrath of his heart punch?
No, but I love Stasiak. I met his son. He's almost a dead ringer. I love the Buzzard Creek, Oregon. And there is such a place, but it's just like a little body of water. There's no such township. The wife goes crazy because she's from Oregon. I always bug her about it. But, you know, he was very underrated, Stasiak. He was a top draw for a long time. But I'm going to tell you a story. You talk about he brought Andre to his knees. In Baltimore one night, he hit the Giants with the heart punch. And he didn't pin him, obviously, or anything like that. But when the Giant was leaving the ring, his eyes were glassy, and his chest was heaving. He was gasping for air, and he wasn't trying to sell anybody because the thing was over. It was like, okay, you know, they'll do a little bit of selling. But he was like, he was hurting. I think the Stasiak really clocked him like that. And I'll tell you, watching Stan the Man, he had a long, long run. The last time we saw him was in 79. Actually, late 78, early 79. And that was it for him. But when he returned in 76, he was main event. Then he hung around, it's sort of like Nikolai. They paralleled. Back in 76, they both hit returned, had main event runs with Bruno, and then kind of faded into mid-card. Then on the August 28th show of 78, Stasiak opened with Danucci in the Garden. You know, collecting a nice payday, but he was a big name. You're so right, TT, a big name out here in the Seattle-Portland area. And, you know, with Jimmy Snuka, Playboy Buddy Rose, Piper, you know, all the Moondog Maine, people of that sort. And it was like, I didn't know. I used to read a thing called Ring Around the Northwest. Once in a while, I would be able to pick up the newsletter. That's all we had back then. And, you know, I'd try to keep up with things. Rick Martel got his start in this territory. And it was like, wow, you know, you just didn't know. Like a guy like Stasiak would be a big face out here. Well, you know, he wrestled superstar Billy Graham for the belt in Toronto in 1977.
I heard, yes.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, and I talk about all of that in the book, it covers it, they actually, a superstar got hurt. He got hurt during the Dusty Rhodes title match on September 26th of 77. So he had missed like 3 weeks. But then he developed all kinds of complications. So they were supposed to meet in Toronto. And since he didn't show up, they put Stasiak was already supposed to wrestle him. So Waldo Von Erich, who was filling in, took Superstar's place. And they said the winner of that match was going to be the new Worldwide Wrestling Federation champion. And it's like, no. You should have checked with Capital Wrestling and Vince Sr. because that wasn't going to fly. Sounded good, but it didn't work. But, you know, that was another thing. Waldo Von Erich was gone. He'd been out of the area well over a year. But when Superstar got hurt, I mean, you had some near riots over that one because he was supposed to wrestle Ivan Putski on the October 1st show in Baltimore. And that was Baltimore was a big Putski town. And when they announced Superstar wasn't going to be there, it was like, oh, boy. But then when they said in his place, Waldo Von Erich, it was like, oh, okay. We've never seen Putski against Von Erich. So then that calmed everything down, and people were glad to stay and watch that. Because a lot of the results sheets will say it was Von Raschke, but he was gone. It was not Baron Von Raschke. It was Waldo Von Erich. Believe me, I know I was there. I even have a picture of it.
Oh, wow. Cool. Very nice. All right. Well, Nikita, it's been good talking with you. Hopefully, we'll have you back on the show sometime. And at this
Please.
Time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy. And if you're ever on the Jimmy Falcon show, tell him QT says hi.
I certainly will, QT. You got it, my friend.
All right. Back to you, Sign Guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, Nikita, we have just a few minutes left today, so I want to give you ample time if you would like to say anything to the fans, plug and promote anything and everything you would like, any merchandise, any social medias, any appearances, any favorite dry cleaner, whatever it is, floor is all yours.
All righty. You can find me on Facebook. I do Twitter, but not that much. Facebook, just make sure... You know, you send me a request. I'm regular Joe like everybody else. I just want to make sure we have a connection or you're a good person. That's all, because there's a lot of crumbs out there. But the one thing I'm going to push is my book, When It Was Real. If you want to read and learn about the WWWF in the 70s, and it covers 1970 to 79, pick it up. You'll enjoy it. It's available at crowbarpress.com, C-R-O-W. B-A-R Press, all one word, .com. The great Scott Teal's website. Scott's got over 200 books. He's a master at what he does. He loves what he does. Nobody's getting rich. We do this for the love of the industry and for the love of wrestling. And we're all fans. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to give what we give. So please, if you want to learn about it or if you remember that time, you were a fan of it, I tell you, it's just a wonderful walk down memory lane. And if you don't want to read about 1971 or 72, it's broken down by year, so it's an easy read. And it's a book that it's fun with all the aggravation in life and things that are going on today. If you want to escape, pick this up and go back and read about the 70s. You'll enjoy it. And what's old is new again. So I'll tell you what, it's a learning lesson for wrestling up-and-comers, fans, whoever. It will definitely be a good companion for anyone. And I thank you so much for the opportunity to be on here, Sound Guy. And you got a great show. And please, I'll be glad to come back anytime.
Oh, good.
We definitely would love to have you back. It's always a pleasure to have you on here. And fans, if you have not picked up the book, definitely do so, especially if you like old territorial wrestling. I think you're going to enjoy it. Scott Till, fantastic at what he does. He's cranked out a number of really, really good books. This one, no exception. So get out there, support your local independent wrestling this week. You can find me in Boise, Idaho for Wrestle Club this week if you're in the Boise area. But no matter where it is, get out there, find yourself a show, support your local wrestling. And we will be back with you Sunday afternoon. Bruiser Bennett, the scheduled guest on Sunday. I think you're going to enjoy him. So make plans to be with us, and we'll talk to you soon.